Unfortunately, this happens more and more as we get later in the session, usually not this early, but it's a very important topic that a lot of people want to share thoughts on. So with that, why don't we've got several teachers here with us that want to offer testimony. Come on up.
You want me to go?
All right, do we have enough chairs? Okay. Very good. And so welcome. Thank you so much for being here. And whatever order you want to go in, and just if you'd please identify yourself for the record so we get that on the tape. And welcome.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Don Sinner. I'm a middle school science teacher, and I'm also the president of Education Minnesota Lakeville. The latest school shooting in Parkland, Florida, has prompted many lawmakers across the country to revive and rehash lots of proposals countering these all-too-common tragedies. I've been an educator for 33 years, and I'll tell you this, arming the teachers and fortifying our schools actually isn't the answer. And I've served as an emergency response team member in a building for many years. The Newtown, Connecticut shooter blasted his way through a hardened entry. People get past guards all the time with weaponry into our schools. More stringent security measures don't stop school shootings. Most school shootings, such as Columbine, are committed by current or former students. Staff members are not going to pick up, if they're armed, and shoot at a student or former student. It's not going to happen. I'll tell you, the two school resource officers in Lakeville High Schools right now are both former students of mine. They do a great job. I like them immensely. But having more school resource officers isn't going to stop what is happening. Educators just aren't wired that way. Our first instinct is not to harm a student, it's to protect them and to de-escalate situations. Educators build relationships. We know children thrive and learn best in an open and welcoming environment. More guns, more locked doors, more metal detectors don't scream welcoming to parents and students. Treating the symptoms reactively does not cure the disease of school violence. Arm us with more well-trained education professionals and support staff. In Lakeville, we have 8 elementary schools. Each has a half-time, half-of-the-day counselor available to them. That gives them a ratio of 1 to 900 students. And they're only in the building half the day. And we can't predict when that meltdown will come of that student who needs that help. The ratio is 1 to 250, as recommended by the American School Counselor Association. And we only have 2 school social workers system-wide for over 10,000 students in Lakeville. Arm us with lower class sizes. I don't know any teacher would pass up the opportunity to have a manageable class size that allow educators to reach every single student in a meaningful way. That would allow them to handle behavior issues proactively with skill and compassion that they are trained for. Arm us with the tools to meet the social, emotional needs, as well as the academic needs of our students. Return on investment is something that we hear quite a bit from legislators and school board members and policymakers. Putting more counselors, social workers in our schools, and helping our families by creating more full-service community models across the state are going to give you a better return on investment than having more armed personnel and school resource officers in our schools. More weapons are not the answer on a battlefield. Diplomacy ends wars, ends violence. More guns are not the answer for our schools. More people who can build relationships and care and reach our students is the solution. Thank you for your time and attention.
All right. Thank you very much. Please go ahead with your testimony.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Kate Schmidt. I'm an elementary school teacher and currently president of Dakota County United Educators. Are educators worried about school safety? You bet we are. More and more teachers are being asked to shield their students and protect them. We're worried. A lot of my members have children of their own, and they're forced to make the choice, do I protect the children in my classroom, or do I go home to my own children at night? So we're very worried. Just this week I heard a story about a kindergartner in one of my elementary schools who has assaulted several teachers and even has gone as far as knocking out an educator's front teeth. And the teacher was protecting the other students in her classroom when she interviewed with the student, a six-year-old. It was not this child's first or only violent outburst. We as educators, we know this baby needs help, but we don't have the help we need to give this child, to give them the support they need. And unfortunately, this student isn't alone. If you really want to make our school safe, if you really care about kids, give students what they need. They need nurses, they need school counselors, school psychologists, and other services to help support them in their learning. They're hungry. They need someone to talk to, and they need to know someone at school cares about them. And my own personal private number one agenda is they need to play again. We're so focused on test scores, our students don't get to play anymore. Mm-hmm. Give our students lower class sizes so we can build stronger relationships with them. We love our students. We're watching out for them. But when I have 30-plus kids in my fourth-grade classroom, I can't give every child the attention they need and deserve to be healthy and successful at school. Our students need access to counselors and social workers. In the Rosemont Apple Valley Eagan School District where I teach, we have no school counselors at the elementary level and a half-time school social worker at each elementary. So our ratio for school social workers is like 1 to 1,800 at the elementary level. Our students, and we've done some great innovative things with partnering with outside agencies to come in and counsel some of our students. Great idea called co-located services. The problem is those people aren't a part of our school community, and the kids don't connect to those counselors that come in one day a week. So we need people who are there every day, not only to access additional supports, but to build relationships with our students. If we're going to spend more money, let's spend it on supporting our students. We don't need armed guards, and don't even get me started on arming our staff. Educators, parents, and law enforcement officers overwhelmingly agree that that is not the answer. We don't want our schools to look and feel like a military complex. The last thing I want to say is educators understand the needs of our schools and our campuses best, yet our voices are often missing from these discussions. Please continue to involve us in these policy decisions. We care as much, if not more, than anyone, and want our schools to be places where all students can learn. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you being here. Mr. Baker.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Tom Baker, and I'd like to thank you for allowing me the opportunity to testify today on school safety. I am the union president in representing the teachers and educators in Eden Prairie, and I also am also a teacher observer in my district. Yesterday, Education Minnesota sent out a survey to its members on gun violence, and in 24 hours, nearly 1,000 educators answered that survey. I'm just here to share some of that survey with you and the committee today. Many of the questions were used in Gallup polling and other national polling on gun violence. I'd first like to share what the educators think we should do to prevent mass shootings, and here are the top five educator responses. Number one, better mental health care. Number two, more extensive background checks. Number three, restrictions on the sale of semi-automatic weapons. Four, limit magazine capacity. Number five, stricter gun control. The need for stricter security for events and buildings came in number 12. Education Minnesota also asked about what is most to blame for the mass shootings. Again, this wording was borrowed from Gallup polling. Here are the answers. most blame goes to the easy access to guns. Second goes to the failure of the mental health care system. There were other responses related to extremist views on the internet, violence in movies, music, video, and drug use. Last, what ranked last was the insufficient security of public buildings, including businesses and schools. Educators do want more secure schools, but we do have different priorities that come before guards and more guns and more locks. Prioritize policy and resources that invest in long-term solutions that support the needs of kids are our priority. We also asked our members some questions about arming teachers. And after looking at the preliminary survey briefly, here's what I can tell you. The vast majority of educators think arming teachers would make schools more unsafe. The vast majority want nothing to do with more guns in schools. Some of the responses include these few quotes. Absolutely not. I will not work in the schools if this becomes a practice in my district. Teachers have too many other issues to focus on with students' needs and curriculum. It would be an invitation for more unnecessary accidents and death. I'll be leaving teaching. Number two, I will be leaving teaching if there are teachers armed with guns. This is a terrible idea. I think it's a massive mistake. And another, arm us with books and resources, not weapons. You have to understand there's unintended consequences for any policy regarding arming school staff. And from the survey results, it will make an already shortage of teachers even worse. It's really important to seek the input of the teachers regarding the impact of these policy changes. These statements and the responses reflected in that survey are reflected in the views and what I know of the teachers and members that I represent. What the educators say over and over, they do not want more guns in classrooms. They want more mental health services and smaller class sizes. They want stricter control for who has access to military-type weapons. And if there's more security in the schools, have them be police officers and not in the classroom. When the teachers I represented heard of this hearing, their response was significant. They are interested in being consulted on policy changes. They're interested in the support from this committee that will directly help and address the needs of their students in the classroom. They would wholeheartedly support investment in building relationships, as I've heard today, and the needs of mental health and counselors. They are not calling for the arming of teachers. In fact, that scares us. They are looking for long-term solutions. And I thank you, Representative Loon, and the members of the committee for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Baker. Welcome.
Good evening. Holly Craigthorpe, representing Educators for Excellence of Minnesota. Madam Chair and committee members, thank you so much for this opportunity to testify. I believe, along with my colleagues, that teacher voice is important on this issue, and I can tell that you share that belief. I'm a resident of 62B. I'm a mom of a 12-year-old and a 14-year-old, and I'm a veteran Minneapolis Public School teacher of 14 years. And school safety has always been really important to me and my colleagues. I started student teaching in 1999, the year of the Columbine shooting. And when I was in Minneapolis Public Schools, I taught at Patrick Henry High School, the site of where we had an intruder with a gun just last week. I'm asking you to listen today to the perspective that the greatest thing that you all can do is to help teachers be more proactive to reduce violence in schools. I'm really appreciative that you're bringing this school safety package bill for comments, and a lot of the comments this morning were made about facilities, which I appreciate, and the perspective of our members is to invest more resources in people. I can tell you that throughout my 14 years of teaching and the 3 years of working with thousands of teachers at E4E, our members share the perspective of Education Minnesota that arming teachers is not the solution. I'm going to talk today about a student that I remember really vividly named Keith. And this is a student that a lot of us on my team and my grade level team, we spent a lot of time problem solving, meeting with him, meeting with his parents, meeting with other teachers and counselors, social workers, et cetera. But when I look back on that time, what I wish I had access to was trauma-informed teaching strategies, a full-time social worker, restorative justice trainings, and I believe that these can be included in a type of school safety package. Research shows us that teachers and students flourish in schools that are welcoming, non-punitive, that encourage positive relationships and prioritize whole child development. Listen, I know that some of you are former teachers, and I can't imagine that you think that arming teachers is a great idea. I also know, Chair Loon, that you support increasing mental health services, and you support student-centered solutions such as PBIS. So I ask that you include those in this package, and thank you for hearing from us.
All right. Thank you very much, Ms. Craigthorpe. And I apologize. I have a weepy eye today, so it's not that the subject isn't making me sad, but that's it. All right. I'm going to go ahead and open it up for questions. And then I did skip over today a couple of other materials that nonpartisan staff prepared on some other programs that might fall into the safety realm, but I want to get through questions and anybody else who wants to testify before we go to that. So, questions. Representative Moran.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just wondering if Mr. Baker can share your survey with the committee here.
It's still open, and so I'm more than happy to sit down and share more of that results. It was a very early look at that, so I'm sure we can work something out for that.
Thank you.
Representative Moran.
Madam Chair, because I was trying to write all those results down. It's like way too much. Yep. So thank you.
Thank you. Good questions. I think all of the points that you raised are really important. And I think it is important to hear from teachers. You're in our classrooms every day. You're with our kids every day. And what's important to you, we had touched on last week on mental health and support services for students, and I absolutely believe that is a key part of what we need to be looking at. I know that you're overwhelmed with needs in your schools, and there's not enough resources for that. So this chair has heard it, and I know the committee members echo that too. And I did put forward a proposal that we'll consider, at some point with regards to facilities upgrades. And I noticed that didn't seem to be high on the list for most of you. So just a question about that. I mean, do you think having some flexibility for schools on making those upgrades would be at least something the committee should be looking at? I think about things like anything else. It's hard to make a building, somebody can get in if they really want to get in. But I also know, in some of my own school district, that it's pretty wide open in some schools to walk in, and that causes me some concern.
Madam Chair, I can address that. In Lakeville, all of our elementaries have a card visual system. All the doors, once the school day starts, are absolutely locked up. And we're considering, like your bill would be for long-term facilities using those dollars, we're looking at being able to have a person in a more hardened corridor that's visible right at that door as well in our elementaries. Our middle schools have the same system, but once the day starts, that's not a very welcoming environment for parents to come in and out and visit their children. We all have magnets. Our elementaries happen to be open doored. There are no doors. All of our high school doors are there, but the full wall into the common area is glass. So you could spend millions upon millions of dollars hardening our building, but it would make it a better environment for our kids to learn in. And we've considered all that, but we've already spent a lot of money trying to secure it. But bottom line, in the high schools, where these things tend to happen the most, in the morning when kids are coming in the parking lot and kids are getting off the buses and they're walking in, it's very simple. I mean, we can't check them all. It's very simple for a motivated student who has an issue. And I've had the morning where we've had the staff meeting. We have a kid who had a girlfriend that was stolen by another student. And he's missing overnight, and Grandpa's shotgun is gone. That's how we started our staff morning. And we're aware, and our staffs are trained, that there's probably not a lot we could have done if that student would have come to school. That he was found prospectively way away from campus. And we've had students who have access to guns that bring them to school with them. We've had situations before. So there's a lot of, the hardening is a great idea, having zones, but what does that do to the effect of our children in our classrooms learning? And that's what our concern is. The money would be a great help. Giving flexibility for those boards to do those, if that's what the community so chooses to do, is great. But is that our top priority, treating that symptom on the backside, rather than let's deal with the kindergarten kid who needs the help? We work cooperatively with 917 in our district, and we have a lot of level 4, level 5 EBD students in our district. And it's cost-effective for our district to do that at home and have them with their home communities where they are. But that takes a certain amount of support professionals in your buildings to be able to house that as well. So though we're in a kid and family business. We're about people, and that's where we think our focuses are, anything you can do for people.
All right, thank you. I appreciate the response to that. Anybody else want to chime in?
I guess I'd add that I know that our district has interest in improving some of the entrances and situations that we have. And I also think it's been that we've made a lot of those improvements already. I think teachers would benefit from the and appreciate the safe feeling that those efforts would provide. And I also think it's a tangible, measurable thing that people can say has been done. To the effect that it would actually have an impact on the improvement of the safety and the improvement of violence in the schools, that's where I think people would have their doubts. That it, as Don's speaking, that the impact that has and the unforeseen consequences of that is hard to put your finger on, and it's not measurable, and the investment in counselors, the investment in mental health, the investment in kids and building those relationships and giving and offering time to do that, those things aren't measurable, and they take a long time, and they are proactive efforts to a solution versus a reactive solution based on a horrific event. And so I guess that's how my first thoughts to that.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, our organization is teacher-led, and we haven't asked them this question, so I don't feel comfortable giving a recommendation on that policy. That said, as a mom of 62B, I think that it sounds reasonable to allow schools to have funding for securing their main entrances.
Thank you. I appreciate that response, and I think it's very thoughtful. So thanks for sharing. Representative Sansit and Representative Mariani, I saw your finger too.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This might just be a point of personal privilege more than a question.
Okay.
As an educator, and as we heard earlier, schools are what are considered soft targets. And if you've studied mass shootings and I don't have all the, you know, evidence right here in front of me, but I would really like to have an offline conversation with you about some of this. There are things that are proven that can, at least by time, maybe change the outcomes of some of these attempts, different things like that, and that is done through hardening up some of these targets. As educators, we're charged with both the learning that, you know, takes place in our schools as well as the security of our students. And I don't I just want to caution all of us, this is not an either or. This is a both. This is a yes and conversation we need to have. I think there are things that we need to do. I think giving school districts the flexibility to use funds to make improvements to their buildings that they see appropriate is wise. In addition to that, I think we need to do everything we can do along the lines of mental health, and you've been great about that, and I appreciate that very much. School districts are, public schools are faced with dealing with whatever comes through our front doors. We don't get to pick and choose. And so much of what plays out in the classrooms, in our buildings, is a result of things not happening in schools, and yet we have to be prepared for that. So I think that this is a really important conversation that we continue to have. I want to encourage us, you know, not to pick or choose what avenue to go down. I think we need to go down both of these avenues simultaneously. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Sandstedt, and I couldn't agree more. Absolutely. Sorry. Representative Mariani, you had your hand up.
Madam Chair, and I would concur as well. Holly, I'm wondering if you can say something quickly about, you mentioned restorative practices, and we could spend a lot of time talking about that, and I don't want us to do that because a lot of my members, fellow members, want to get home to eat dinner. But it's an important concept here, and so you raised it up quickly. Maybe you can just, if you can, tell us quickly what that is and why is that important in terms of school environment safety issues.
Ms. Craigthorpe.
Madam Chair, Representative Mariani, our teachers have advocated, after doing some research on school discipline, they have advocated for increasing training and resources for teachers to implement restorative justice in their classrooms and their schools, whereby the student is held to what we believe is a greater level of accountability for their behavior, for their intents, and for the reparations to the community. This takes a lot of, it takes time and resources and people to implement it well. But it's been showing, evidence has proven to reduce violence in schools that implement and also reduce suspensions and other exclusionary measures in schools that implement restorative justice.
Thank you. Yes, Representative Jurgens.
Thank you for asking that question, Representative Mariani, because I was going to follow up and get more information on that as well. My question is, what's preventing you from doing it now? What the restorative justice, if you are, what role can the legislature play in that?
Ms. Craigthorpe?
Madam Chair, Representative Jurgens, pardon me if I mispronounced that. Right now, there are teachers who are able to implement restorative justice on their own. It's much more effective if it's implemented school-wide, which takes the resources, someone to facilitate the circle, someone to ensure that when a student is returning from a suspension that the parent is brought in, that there is a restorative circle happening. So it's I believe it's a question of resources dedicated to training and supporting teachers who are implementing it.
Representative Jurgens.
So, but it's a decision made at the school level or the district level of whether or not to go down that path and implement that type of a program?
Ms. Craigthorpe.
Madam Chair, Representative Jurgens, great question, and what you're getting at is a little bit of, in my belief, a lack of transparency in school funding. We can see how funding is allocated at the state. We're not entirely sure what happens once the funding is then disseminated to the districts and the schools. There is opportunity to use certain allocated funds for this purpose. It's impossible to see how much schools are receiving currently and how much is available.
Okay. Representative Jurgens.
That is something that I'm interested in learning more about, the restorative justice. We were talking earlier with some of the other testifiers about threat assessment teams, and it sounds like it's along the same lines, as where you're bringing in a bigger circle of people to help with whatever the issue is or the individual issues that, that someone is having. So I think that I like what I'm hearing on that, and I think that that sounds like it has merit.
Mr. Skinner, you wanted to contribute to that?
Madam Chair, Mr. Representative Juergens, one of the things that it takes, if you're trying to implement that in a system or in a building, is it takes the people. When we went through the hard post-recession, Great Recession, whatever you want to call it, we lost 153 educators over a span of 3 years. Part of that was full-time counselors at all of our buildings. And all of a sudden, we were squeezed, and how do we keep class size manageable? How do we keep student options as much on the table as possible without cutting programs? And so it's a matter of sometimes what do you offer and do you have the personnel to implement the policy? And when you're doing restorative justice, as I understand it, it takes the people to sit down and have those conversations with the students who are trained in it, but that's a one-to-one small group setting that you have to have some people, whether it's deans, counselors, administrators, a specific social worker that's on staff. You have to have people to be able to implement a program like that for it to be effective. And without, that's why we talk about the people, the support people, the staff that are there, that would allow that kind of a program to be put in place. And a lot of districts would love to try it, but they don't have the personnel to implement it.
Thank you. Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Juergens, I'm going to apologize at the beginning, and maybe you'll get an apology at the end if I remember. So please accept that. on this question, I think we need to look in the mirror. During Governor Pawlenty's time, the rhetoric around school funding got focused around what percentage of dollars is a school district spending in the building, in the classroom, Where was Minnesota nationally on spending in the classroom? School counselors don't count when the focus is on spending only in the classroom. School social workers don't count when the spending is only prioritized if it can be counted as in the classroom. We, in our rhetoric, drove school district decisions to not count, not invest in deans, not invest in counselors, not invest in social workers, not invest in coordinators for full-service community schools because it wasn't spending in the classroom. And you still hear that sometimes today. And instead, we should be talking about money invested in the kids. Because for the kid spends an awful lot of their time during the day, but they may need the services of a counselor or a social worker. They may need the connection to the woman working the lunch line or the janitor, because guess what? The janitor looks like them and nobody else in the school does. We as the legislature and we as politicians need to take some responsibility for driving the spending in schools. My apologies. I hope that that was helpful. Thank you.
Representative
Pam. Thank you, Madam Chair. First, I want to say ditto to Representative Daphne on that part. And so I agree with, and the reason I'm so would like to get this the survey, because I really believe that teachers who are in it, and the staff in the schools, need to be really a part of the solution. And not us from the outside saying what we think is best for schools and how to engage kids and keep schools safe. So my hope is that we can take into really big considerations what teachers are saying across the state about how we keep our schools safe. In regards to restorative practice, I think when we was moving the bullying bill through this process, that we talked about restorative justice practices. And if we're not training teachers and staff in the building around restorative practice, which is really is about creating those circles, but you bring the bully in and a person who's been bullied, or in this case, whatever the issue is, that youth, that young person, and they become a part of the solution they are looking within themselves and say, how do I, you know, what did I do wrong? How can I make it better? And they are part of the solution process. So the restorative practice is a practice that is not just adults in the building saying what needs to happen. It is that young person who's a part of the solution. And they're doing some self-reflections about what they can and how it can be done better. So it's a good practice, but you need to be trained in the process. And so as we as a committee looking at our school system, looking at how we finance solutions, that we look at evidence-based practices, we look at teachers being a part of the solutions, and, you know, and that we learn from that. We do a lot of spending, and we're not where we need to be. And so those who are in it needs to be definitely a part of the solution to what needs to happen to create some better and some different outcomes.
Yeah. And Ms. Craig-Brook, you look like you wanted to comment.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I would just like to point out that the three of us are not currently classroom teachers, and we have thousands of classroom teachers who are experts in restorative practices, and members of our organization have put forth recommendations on transparent and equitable school funding, and we would love to set up a time to meet outside of committee time.
All right. Thank you. Thank you. Let's see. Other questions? I know Mr. Uni from the department, I think, is here and wanted to offer a couple of comments as well. So if there are no other questions for our teacher panel, I'll give you all a big thank you for being here, for taking time to stay late. We appreciate it very much. Great comments, great thoughts. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
And Mr. Uni, if you want to come down. Welcome.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Adosh Uni, Director of Government Relations of the Department of Education. Thanks for the opportunity to just make some brief comments on the discussion today and your and the bill that was put forth today. Today is my day of just making short, pleasant comments. So happy to continue the streak all day long.
And you're always welcome, Mr. Uni. Thank you.
How kind, Madam Chair. What I would want to communicate first is we really welcome the proposal today about opening up the discussion around enhancing safety and security at our school buildings and for our students through your proposal on long-term facility maintenance. We think this opens the discussion for some robust ideas around this enhancements. And as you know, the governor, the commissioner has been talking with the governor about safe schools. You know, the governor last week mentioned that he is thinking about some ideas. And so we hope to be coming forth in the near future to discuss those ideas and have a robust discussion that takes in not only the discussion today, but many of the other discussions around supporting our students and supporting the infrastructure at our schools going forward.
Very good. Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Wayne. We appreciate that. And I know I had a brief conversation with the commissioner about this topic a week or two ago, and so we look forward to working with you and with the commissioner and the governor on this topic.
Right. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. All right, and then we had nonpartisan staff put together some really great information for us, and we kind of skipped over all of the rest of it after we talked about long-term facilities maintenance because I wanted to start getting to some testimony. But if we could just briefly go over those, there's a few, what we asked them for was just sort of some briefing materials for all of us on different resources that currently exist in our schools or things that schools are required to do around the broad category of school safety. So whoever wants to, Mr. Strom, is it your?
Madam Chair, I think all three of us have just a few things to say. I'll try to be quick. Two of the other sources of revenue in addition to the long-term facilities maintenance revenue that have been considered in the school safety area include the Safe Schools Levy, which we've talked a little bit about before. There's a one-page sheet describing the revenue and the expenditure uses, and then there's a district-by-district printout showing that revenue, how much each school district gets, both in total dollars and amounts per pupil. And the third thing in that packet that's probably quite interesting is a chart that Ms. Adrian's put together that shows how school districts are spending their school safety money. And perhaps it'd make most sense to focus on that sheet while we talk about the roughly $40 million that's in the school safety expenditures.
Ms. Adrian.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I know this is small print, so my apologies for that. But the agency does several reports that have lots of information that can be really useful. And so what this does, it just kind of breaks out the way that the safe school levy money is spent. And this is a statewide chart. And so you'll see that the first column is the total of all of those different program descriptions. And then I had, you know, it was like 9 pages of stuff, so I tried to consolidate things into column headings that made sense. And the only one in all of these codes are at the very top, so like the admin supervision, there's alcohol and chemical dependency counselor, all of those things are part of their UFAR system. And so the only one that I wanted to just kind of read the description to was the one that is consulting fees and fees for services, because that makes up a really big chunk, and that one is not very descriptive. And this might be kind of helpful, but otherwise, if you have more questions about it, I'm happy to talk more at length with you about it. So for the consulting fees, these are just costs that include payments for professional services like legal, audit, accounting, advertising, custodial, laundry, et cetera. This code is used by districts in the special education programs for contracted service costs provided to staff. It includes expenditures for purchased services, if not enumerated by other object codes in the series. So just to provide a little extra information there.
And Ms. Adrian's, okay, so this is totally confusing to me, but just a quick question. So would that encompass fees or paying for a school resource officer, or where does that fall in this chart?
Madam Chair and members, exactly. Yes, that's exactly right.
Okay.
Yeah, it is. It's a lot of information, and it's just one way to show how some of the safe school levy money is spent. And, you know, there you could also look at just an individual district and how one district might spend it. And, you know, like rolled into a lot of these, you know, is more information. It's just a lot. So this was just one snapshot and one way of providing information at how that money is spent.
Okay. Thank you. So one other question. So I'm just trying to determine, because right now under safe schools, you could use that money for kind of physical things like equipment and facilities, things like that, or personnel. So the equipment and facilities, is that everything that would be spent on, like, if you were going to do a building upgrade or something, that's all of it, and the rest is being spent on personnel, or do we know that for sure?
Madam Chair, I think you're right. I'm going to let Mr. Strom add a little bit more information.
Okay.
Madam Chair, members, just one other thing to add is that when a school district codes an expenditure, as these are, the rows are all what is referred to in the UFAR's manual as program codes, and then across the top, those are all objects. And in the UFAR's manual, it describes what goes into each of those. But the important thing to remember is that when a school is coding an expenditure for a program like Safe Schools, it's basically showing that it's spending all of the money allocated under a reserve for Safe Schools in that category to show that it's met that burden. But it won't necessarily code other kinds of facility matters as a Safe Schools expenditure, because they can show up in other revenue categories. So the spreadsheet that Ms. Adrian has prepared for you shows the $2.9 million that's spent essentially of Safe Schools money on those activities. But as the Osseo district was speaking to earlier, in other districts, if they're spending other types of money, those won't show up in the Safe Schools block of information. They'll be coded under debt service, or they'll be coded somewhere else. So the amount of facilities expenditures on school safety will be quite a bit higher than that, but for the $40 million in the Safe Schools program, this is how much is in that category.
Thank you, Mr. Sherman. That was my question. It was of the $40 million for Safe Schools, how much is spent on facilities? Okay. Thank you. That's helpful. Did you have your hand up, Representative Dabney?
No, I did not.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. All right. Make sure I didn't miss anybody. All right. Any questions about that program? All right. Go ahead, Mr.
Madam Chair, a second area that school districts mentioned today where they spend money, where they can spend money for school safety is through the operating capital reserve, which is part of their general education revenue. There's another printout and then a two-sided sheet explaining that program. You can see from that printout that it's about $216 million a year that school districts get for operating capital purposes. And then if you look at the two-sided sheet for the eligible uses, you can see that the list is 30 bullets long. It's a really long list that it can be used for. But I wanted to point out that the fourth item on the – or the one, two, three, fourth item on the list, improving and repairing school sites and buildings would include any kind of school safety work that a district would choose to code there. And, again, those items then would be coded to the operating capital reserve so that they could show that they're meeting the criteria that be spent for one of these many uses listed. And there, again, it could be broken down by program and object, but to the extent that it's combined, usually the facilities work is going to be combined, so there won't be a separate code, for example, for building a safe entranceway versus building a new entry into the school. So it'd be hard to separate out the amount of that that's just for school safety. But as a revenue source to districts, there's about $216 million there in the operating capital per year for districts to spend.
Thank you. Mr. Strom, any questions on the operating capital expenditure program? Okay, and then you had a presentation or a sheet on school safety statutes. Ms. Pera.
Madam Chair, members, yes, this is it's just a two-sided kind of summary of some relevant statutes. Kind of grouped by theme. And the first one is school crisis management policy. Section 121 AO35 is for public schools and charters, and 121 AO37 is for private schools and other educational institutions. School districts and charter schools have to have a crisis management policy. They have to have a certain number of lockdown drills, fire drills, et cetera. And private schools do as well. Fire drills, in Chapter 299F is what is the chapter of law that has the fire code. And the fire marshal requires schools to have certain number of fire drills and post, that they've done this. There is also a role for the fire marshal, as schools kind of develop these policies for what to do in the event of, a violent crisis or something else, they probably want to consult with the fire marshal. As it says here, and the fire marshal actually, a lot of these policies, they're not in law or in rule. They have the fire marshal has on the website lots of information on this issue that might be helpful for folks to consult. The school crisis response teams, you heard about that earlier today, the school safety center and its role working with the department and with school districts throughout the state. And then the second side of this is school disciplinary policies and notification. For example, school districts have to report to the commissioner incidents involving the use or possession of dangerous weapon in school zones. School boards have to expel students that bring a firearm to school, but they can modify the expulsion on a case-by-case basis. And then there are two provisions here, 121A64 and 122A42, that relate to teachers. One says a classroom teacher has a legitimate educational interest in knowing which students in the class have a history of violent behavior, so they have to be notified of that before the student is placed in the classroom. And the teachers may also remove students from class for violent or disruptive behavior. And there are other statutes that relate to procedures and things that the school has to do before removing students from classrooms. But you can see those in the Pupil Fair Dismissal Act and other sections in Chapter 121A. And finally, Section 121A65 requires the principal or other person in charge of school to annually review the discipline policy and assess whether the policy has been enforced.
Thank you, Ms. Pera. Any questions for Ms. Pera? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Pera, is 121A.44 the exact language that we have in statute?
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, no. These are all paraphrased. Some of these statutes are pretty short, so they pretty closely track the language, but no, that is not the exact language. I'd be happy to read it if that is helpful.
Well, Madam Chair and Ms. Pera, I will look them up and read them. I just needed to know if you had paraphrased or if this were in some way the exact language. Thank you. No, I'll double check all of them. I do have a question, Madam Chair, though, of the first item that Ms. Pera referred to, and that is the reporting of incidents to the commissioner. I wonder if Mr. Uni has any idea as to what data we have on that generally, not naming districts or anything, but to what extent has information come to you about the use or possession of dangerous weapons in school zones? Do you know if that's been increasing or stayed the same or not very much? Do you have any general statement you can make?
Yeah,
Mr. Rooney.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, unfortunately, I don't have the information off the top of my head. I haven't reviewed the report recently about the use or incidences of dangerous weapons on school grounds. I do believe we track that information. We have a report on that. I'm sure I'd be more than happy to get that information and provide some summary information to the committee in short order.
Madam Chair, I think that would be good for us to see, at least for you and me.
Yes.
And the leagues on the DFL side, too.
Yes. Thank you, Representative Erickson. And we will distribute that information to the committee members. Thank you, Mr. Uni. All right. We've covered all the materials, right? Okay. Thank you very much to nonpartisan staff for pulling that information together. Any other questions or comments from committee members at this time? Representative Mariani.
I just want to echo your appreciation to the staff for putting together good information, and thank you for organizing that for us. We learned a lot of important things here today, so I appreciate it.
Thank you. Yeah, life moves kind of fast here, and it's always good to have that refresher, even if you've seen it at some point down the road. So, all right, with that, I want to thank all of you for taking time to come back. I think it was a good hearing with a lot of information today. So with that, Education Finance.